Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We welcome those of you joining us in the United States, those listening around the world. Sometimes it seems like the world is going crazy. Just over the last couple of weeks, even as the national election has taken so much of the attention with the midterm elections just passed on Tuesday, there have been a lot of things that have kind of gone under the radar that we need to go back and talk about, things that were missed just in the course of the last several days. I mean, things that are missed such as school districts beginning to ban tag on the basis that this children's game is inherently too dangerous and too competitive, such as the state of New York being a primary battleground for the culture war, and the city of New York now deciding that it's going to allow persons to choose their sexuality based upon some very, very flimsy kinds of argumentation, such as the fact that we have in different parts of the country people now arguing that, marriage is simply out of date. It's no longer to be the culturally accepted and esteemed institution it once was because, as one prominent sociologist is now saying, it just doesn't meet our emotional needs anymore. We're going to be talking about that. My guest today is going to be with me, Dr. Russell Moore. We also today broadcasting before a live audience here in Louisville, Kentucky. We'll be taking your calls. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, to review some issues in the news, of course, one of the major issues we were all following on Tuesday was how those efforts to define marriage as a union of a man and a woman, and therefore to outlaw or ban same-sex marriage, would fare in the several states. Now, the state that got the most attention in this was, of course, Arizona, which became the first state to vote down a constitutional amendment that would have outlawed same-sex marriage. This was Proposition 107 on the Arizona ballot. I want to read to you what that proposition stated. Proposition 107 that narrowly went down in Arizona stated this: to preserve and protect marriage in this state, only a union between one man and one woman shall be valid or recognized as a marriage by the state or its political subdivisions, and no legal status for unmarried persons shall be created or recognized by this state or its political subdivisions that is similar to that of marriage. Period. That appears to be straightforward, uncomplicated. It's precisely the same kind of language that was overwhelmingly adopted in several states just a matter of 2 years ago. 17 states up last 2 years on the issue, and in 2004, 17 states adopted it. The average percentage of the vote for these constitutional amendments was over 70%. The state that had the narrowest margin was Oregon, 54%, and now you're looking at Arizona. The question that's being asked by some is this: is Arizona becoming a blue state? Is it moving into a more culturally liberal position? Now, there are several complicating factors here. One of them is the language of Proposition 107. There's no doubt that homosexual rights activists are looking to Arizona and saying, there's a big victory, a huge victory. That huge victory is that we finally turned one down. Well, it was turned down. We now have, in the days after the election, some incredible data on why it was turned down. There's one clause in Proposition 107 that appears to be the central issue that doomed the measure, and that is this statement: no legal status for unmarried persons shall be created or recognized by this state or its political subdivisions that is similar to that of marriage. Why is that different than what has caused so much controversy in other states? Why would that particular clause be the reason why Proposition 107 went down in Arizona? Well, because Arizona, like so much of America, is increasingly libertarian. That is to say, you have economic conservatives who are not moral conservatives. They are instead libertarians who say that the government should not be legislating the moral behavior of its citizens. Of course, the problem with the libertarian argument is eventually it's anarchy. Eventually, there is no law because all law eventually constrains human moral behavior. That's what the law does. The other problem with libertarianism is that it begins to bring in various causes. I'll protect your rights if you'll protect mine. I'll negotiate against this amendment if you will contend for my cause. What complicated the issue in Arizona? Nursing homes. Very, very interesting. The elderly in Arizona tended in numbers unprecedented in terms of other elections in other states to vote against the proposition. Why? It is because there are those who are pressing for tax relief through domestic partnerships for elderly Americans. Very, very interesting. That could only happen in a libertarian culture. That could only emerge out of a libertarian argument. And this tells us something very significant about where America is. Not just Arizona, but where America is on these issues. Judd Slikva, writing in Slate, in the article entitled, Am I Blue?, talking about what he calls Arizona's flirtation with becoming a blue state, says that this issue, the downfall of Proposition 107, was really not a great gain for gay rights. It was instead a gain for libertarianism, because it appears that's what's happening. Let me read to you from his article. He says, believe it or not, domestic partnerships are a big deal in the retirement communities that surround the cities in Arizona. Passing a law that could be interpreted to deprive those groups of such rights virtually guaranteed that the measure would be strongly opposed. The other interesting thing to look at is that the measure, Proposition 107, failed in only four counties of Arizona. And this happened to be where the population of Arizona is centered. A sign of things to come? I don't know. But it does look like, politically, just in terms of the public relations, yes, Arizona's defeat of Proposition 107 was something of a gain for gay rights activists. But in reality, a far bigger gain came yesterday in the state of Massachusetts. Because in Massachusetts, the lawmakers facing the Constitutional Convention there have voted by recess yesterday not to allow the measure towards a constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage to go forward. This comes down to a matter of constitutional shenanigans. The Constitutional Convention did not allow a vote. Had they allowed a vote, it would only take 25% positive to force going forward with a constitutional amendment. Were there enough votes for 25%? Oh, yes. There is no doubt there were that many votes. But there was a majority that didn't want to face the issue, and so they did not allow the 25% to vote. Instead, they recessed. If they had adjourned, Governor Romney could force them back into session. But instead, they have recessed. Representative Byron Rushing, a Boston Democrat, assistant majority leader, said this, for all intents and purposes, the debate has ended. What members are expecting is that the majority of constituents are going to say, thank you, we're glad it's over, we think it has been discussed enough. Now that really is a very key statement being made there by a political leader in Massachusetts. What he is saying is that those who defeated by their constitutional shenanigans, this going forward, by their manipulation of this constitutional process, a manipulation that Governor Romney calls basically defrauding the people of Massachusetts of their constitutional rights, by doing this, they do not think they are incurring the wrath of Massachusetts citizens. That's what's interesting. Just 2 years later, they do not believe that this is going to cost them politically. Now, let me make a prediction for you. If it doesn't cost them politically, then this will be a huge gain for the homosexual rights movement. And what we have here is the effort to wear down the American will to oppose same-sex marriage. That's the agenda. If we can wear down the agenda to oppose, the will to oppose same-sex marriage, then eventually it will become a reality across the country. So Arizona, it turns out, big gain. Well, in terms of the public relations, yes, but in terms of actually voting up or down gay rights, gay marriage, no, because, by the way, in Arizona, there's already a law that prohibits same-sex marriage. Proposition 107 was an attempt to get a constitutional amendment. That failed. Public relations downfall, yes, for those opposed to same-sex marriage. This was a defeat, but it turns out to have been a very narrow one. But in Massachusetts, a big one. All you have to do is look at the state of Massachusetts, realize its influence in the culture, and realize its proximity there in New England. If you're coloring the country in terms of domestic partnerships, same-sex unions, and legalized marriage, which right now is only in Massachusetts, then New England is colored positive on those issues. And you have basically only the state of New Hampshire where it's not found in one form or another. And so it's going to be found almost always and everywhere throughout New England. And so what you have is a creeping population movement across the country for this. And so you add the liberalism of the two coasts with the libertarianism of some of the interior areas, and you can see why those who are the proponents of same-sex marriage think that time is on their side. Now, here's the big question, is it? I mean, they are absolutely convinced that time is on their side. They are convinced that the American will, which right now, reflected in surveys and polls, is massive opposed to same-sex marriage. They are convinced that they can wear it down. How are they going to do it? First of all, by spreading the map in terms of both marriage and marriage-like structures, such as same-sex unions, domestic partnerships, etc. The other way they're going to do it is by arguing that, hey, look, we've had gay marriage in Massachusetts and the sky hasn't fallen. You know, the economy's still robust. Al-Qaeda hasn't attacked us. The society has not imploded. But, of course, that is the essence of moral short-sightedness. Just 2 years after all this has taken place, we're in no position to talk about how this has weakened marriage, how this has changed the society, how this has affected children. We're living in a strange time, and we're dealing with all kinds of weird issues. What kind of world is it in which kids can't play tag or volley or a dodgeball anymore? And when they're told that it's just too competitive, what kind of sense does that make? Does it make sense that some people now argue to say that marriage doesn't meet our emotional needs? We're living in some strange time, and we need to talk about it. Phone number 877-893-8255. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Some things have to be actually seen to be believed. If you haven't seen it, you need to see the press reports indicating that Willett Elementary School in Attleboro, Massachusetts has banned tag. That's right, folks. No more of that dangerous and frightening game in which one kid runs after another. None of that in Attleboro. They discovered trouble with a capital T, and its name is tag. What kind of world are we living in which children can't play tag? They can't play dodgeball either. Matt Labash, writing in the Weekly Standard, a cover story just a couple of years ago, indicated that all across America, school districts are banning dodgeball. Why? Because they say it is bringing out a competitive nature in kids who enjoy hitting each other with the ball. Well, surprise, surprise, that's why the game was invented. And when you start looking at these games, have you noticed that most of our games actually involve a military component? We talk about, you know, the team marching down the field. We talk about offense and defense, and we talk about them driving deeply into enemy territory. What do they think we're doing here? Playing, you know, this is having tea? This is a game in which competitive nature comes out, and kids are going to play tag. Kids have restless energy. They enjoy chasing each other, and they enjoy touching, catching the kid and saying, "You're it." Well, with me on the program today, and it for the next few minutes, is Dr. Russell Moore, Dean of the School of Theology and Director of the Carl F. H. Henry Institute for Evangelical Engagement here at Southern Seminary. Ever been it, Dr. Moore?
I have indeed. I've been hit quite a few times.
Yeah, well, you've been it, and we've been caught. And that's the thing. We've been both the catcher and the catchee in this game as kids. And, you know, I just don't know how you have childhood without childhood play. You know, I just have to look at this and wonder, have we reached the point where as a society we are so litigious and we are so supervision-minded that we're not saying, by the way, that kids should obey the rules and play tag only in certain areas and only at certain times. We're not saying we don't call down bullies for being bullies. But just to outlaw a game like tag, I mean, what's next?
And, you know, I don't just blame the wacko school administrations that are doing this. It's parents. Parents are the ones who are coming in complaining, "My kid got hit by a ball, and I'm calling a trial lawyer to do this." There's a culture that would cause a school district to act this way, and it's a sick culture.
Well, absolutely. The district is responding out of fear. You know, I know there are probably some left-wing thinkers out there who actually think that any kind of competition is wrong, and, you know, because someone's going to be it, they're going to feel oppressed because the majority isn't it. You know, you can have this going on. And if you're it too often, then you become an oppressed minority group, you know, in which you form an its rights movement in Washington or something. But, you know, that's coming next. But I don't think that's what the main thing happening here is. I think what's happening here is you have school boards saying childhood is becoming so dangerous that we've got to put these kids in such a safe environment that we won't allow them to run, we won't allow them to play, no one can be it. And because it's not just physical injury, they're worried about psychological injury.
And have you ever seen little boys playing some of these PTA-approved non-competitive sports?
Yeah, they turn them into something else.
Sure they do, because it's the most boring thing in the world to sit around and no one wins. You see that all the time with childhood sports leagues, for instance.
Yeah.
You don't keep score. Well, somebody's keeping score. You have to for the game to even be enjoyable.
You know, one of the moms in the seminary wives Institute here told me that she watched her young son pick up a Barbie doll one time and she thought, this could be trouble. What is this? And then she noticed that her four-year-old cocked one leg and stuck the other one forward, made a pistol out of her, and started running around the room. You know, there is just something competitive about all this, and it's going to come out one way or another.
Oh, that's right. And all of these little boys who are off playing the non-competitive sports are the same ones who have so much built-in aggression they don't know how to channel, so they're the ones fighting after the competition is over with one another.
Well, now you're talking my game here, because that's why I loved dodgeball. Dodgeball was my middle school favorite thing. because you got to take out all your frustrations. And you know what? You didn't get in trouble for hurting somebody.
That's right. And the bully, you get to hit him with the ball just
That's
as
right.
fair as anything.
That's right. Right. And now they're outlawing it because they're saying you just can't do it. I mean, frankly, I had such a poor eyesight, I couldn't see the baseball, but I could throw a dodgeball.
That's right. Hit somebody.
That's right. Well, you know, you start looking at this, and again, what really bothers me is how you see this spread across the country, because it's like there's a new normal reset, and the new normal is we can't let kids be kids. And, you know, let's just talk about childhood violence for a moment, because that's what's being alleged here, is that children are violent playing tag. And I mean, you can play tag in a pretty violent manner, and you know what? It feels good to tag that kid. He's
sure.
out. But, you know, if you're talking about a real bully, you can discipline the bully, pull him out of the game or whatever. What they're talking about here is that children should learn only to play cooperative games. Now, here's the problem. That isn't even life.
No.
I mean, you're not training kids for life. And then, as you say, they wonder why these kids don't have any healthy way to release, you know, that kind of energy. You know, people in the past, for instance, the origin of the YMCA, and by the way, it used to be a Christian ministry, very explicitly Christian ministry. It's basically just in the title now. They don't even spell out the C. It says YMCA. It used to be the Young Men's Christian Association. You know, the idea behind that was the strenuous Christianity of the 19th century. That was the idea that young men, for instance, children in particular, but boys and young men, have a lot of energy they need to get out. There's a lot of competitiveness they need to get out. And the origins of this from people within the church was to say, let's channel that in safe ways. Let's let them play games. Mm-hmm. Let's let them punch, you know, punching bags. Let's put them in, instead of having them fighting on the streets in gangs, let's put them in a boxing ring. And you know what? We still make movies about that. Mm-hmm. And we still hold that up as an ideal, and then we outlaw it in school.
But you know what you have to have, Dr. Mueller, in order to do that, or dad? Because moms are naturally the ones who are going to be a little bit fearful, and usually it takes a dad to come in and say, don't worry about him, he's going to be okay. When you've got a whole society that marginalizes dads, yeah. all that's going to be left is what we have here.
Somebody's got to be able to say he'll mend,
yeah.
whether he does or not.
I saw a little 4-year-old on a tricycle out in the backyard wearing a helmet in my neighborhood, just in his backyard riding around. I'm thinking, who's putting a helmet on this kid on a tricycle in the backyard?
Yeah.
Well, that's somebody who doesn't have a dad there to say, I think you'll be okay for 5 minutes without
yeah.
the helmet.
Well, I can tell you that one day I tried to ride my bicycle when I was about 9, and I was showing off, and I went over the handlebars.
Mm-hmm.
And I was all messed up, and I came in the house, and my father took one look at me and said, well, you won't do that again.
Yeah.
That's a very different approach than what you would get from some. And he was right. I didn't. And, you know, I healed. Everything's all right. All right. Well, that's debatable. But anyway, when it comes to this, everything's all right. The issue is, you know, what kind of society are we becoming? Because we're looking at having to protect everything. And, of course, this comes down to the laughable, too, because sometimes, you know, you buy a product and you look at the warnings on it and you think,
yes.
What demented human soul would ever try that?
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that it's there for a reason. Someone really has decided to get the coffee from McDonald's and carry it in his lap.
And to call a trial lawyer after that happens.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Right.
Folks, to join this conversation, the number is 877-893-8255. Like always, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, where Chad's on the line listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Chad.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great. Glad to hear from you.
I was just thinking here, you guys talking about the sports, you know, the dodgeball and things. I was just wondering what you think about the I feel pretty strongly about the teamwork aspect of a lot of team sports that kids learn, and you know, they take that into the workplace, and those are some of the most successful people that we have. Just wanted to get your all's thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I have to say that teamwork, again, is a necessary childhood experience of learning. You have to learn to be able to do this, and yes, I would give a positive affirmation to team activities, team sports, and that's where, you know, often adults have to step in to make sure. I mean, you don't just say line up and go out and, you know, maul each other. That's why you have adult coaches. That's why you have adult supervision. And that's why you use team sports as a way of teaching more than the sports. You use it as a way of teaching morality and character and all the rest.
And you cooperate for a goal, which is competition. When you remove the competition, now you have cooperation for nothing. That's not preparing anybody to do anything in real life.
You know, I was at a major university not too long ago, and the law school was having a debate over a lot of issues related to higher education. And one of them was the charge that these team sports, such as football, are basically teaching all the wrong lessons of life about competition and using the military metaphors and all the rest. And you know my first thought when I saw that? If they take that argument out of the law school, they're going to be in big trouble. And you know what? There are probably 50 people listening to that legal debate. The stadium that weekend, they were outnumbered. Folks, the phone number is 877-893-8255. We're talking about a return to common sense in a culture that's giving itself to irrationality. 877-893-TALK, coast to coast. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Before a live studio audience with WFIA here in Louisville today, and we're talking about the insanity of what's going on in this country with, for instance, tag and dodgeball being outlawed by school districts because it brings out competitiveness and may endanger children both physically and psychologically and all the rest. We're seeing the outlawing of childhood effectively in so many ways. My guest today is Dr. Russell Moore, and we have Susan on the line calling from Snowflake, Arizona, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to first tell you that I appreciate your ministry. It's awesome. My cell phone might die, so I'll make this real quick. I'm in Arizona, and I was where me and all my friends were appalled about 107. Second of all, I do totally agree with you about the school districts outlawing those games, but yet those same parents that think that they're so disturbing, those games are disturbing to their kids, will set them in front of a TV and let them play violent video games, you know, for hours on end. I don't get it.
Susan, thank you so much for your call and for those kind words and for making such a great point. And I want to come back and say that when you just to affirm what you said here, when you see what a lot of parents are letting kids do psychologically, and then you see what they don't let them do physically, you have to wonder what kind of Gnosticism they're buying into. Gnosticism was the ancient heresy that said you can divide the mind and the body, the psychological and the physical, and you can be virtuous in one part of your life and not virtuous in the other. Christianity doesn't accept that at all.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the other thing is, she talked about video games, gangster rap, all kinds of things. They're listening to music about violence and about aggression, but in a very ungodly and unhealthy kind of a way. There's no coach there. There's no dad there. There's no one channeling that kind of aggression. She's exactly right. It makes no sense at all.
Yeah, and then you have to put this together with larger currents in the culture. And, for instance, just to amplify your point and to pick up where Susan was talking, you know, you have, for instance, kids that are wearing violent messages on their clothing, and they're dressing like gang members. And you know, you've got this, and they're wearing their pants down. You know, what we need to say to these kids is, pull up your pants, go play tag.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Shifting to another subject here, the New York Times fascinating story this week by Damian Cave indicating that the city of New York is moving forward with a plan to let people alter the sex on their birth certificate even if they had not had sex change surgery. Now, the sex change surgery is controversial enough in itself, but now we're entering a new form of moral insanity. The New York City Board of Health is planning to adopt policies soon that would allow people born in New York to change their documented sex on their birth certificates by providing affidavits. You got to listen to this. Providing affidavits from a doctor and a mental health professional laying out why their patients should be considered members of the opposite sex and asserting that their proposed change would be permanent. Now listen, this is very interesting. Applicants would have to have changed their name and shown that they'd lived in their adopted gender for at least 2 years, but there would be no explicit medical requirements. Now, I'm going to have to read to you the next sentence from the New York Times. I feel like I have to preface this by saying, I promise I'm not making this up. Quote, Dr. Thomas R. Frieden, the city's health commissioner, said, surgery versus non-surgery can be arbitrary. Somebody with a beard may have had breast implant surgery. It's the permanence of the transition that matters most. Now, I guarantee you, I never thought I'd have to read that on a national radio broadcast. And what kind of insanity does this represent?
The requirement is you have to change your name. So what if your name's Pat? I mean, this is absolutely insane to saying I'm a man or I'm a woman. I mean, that's going to have all kinds of ramifications. Think about the public restrooms in New York, having men gathered in there saying, oh,
well, what you have here is a biannual sex change opportunity. Because all you have to do is have lived as this purported sex for 2 years. And you know, what they're trying to do is adopt to this postmodern understanding of sex and gender. And I think we need to kind of review what that really represents. It means that they're arguing that your physicality doesn't determine anything about your gender. And your gender is whatever you intuit it to be, what your intuition tells you you are. And that's the language you hear now. I've had people write me and call the program saying, I just know that I'm really not what, you know, my body says I am. Well, again, that goes right back to what we were talking about. That's the Gnostic heresy. That's the accusation that you can have a different body and an incompatible soul. You know, your interior and your exterior are completely different. The Christian worldview says you are, you know, what you are, because we are not accidents of biology. We're not evolutionary products. We're the creatures of a holy God who made us in this way. Folks, I just believe across this country there must be enough people who think this is insane. I just hope there are enough people in New York City who think this is insane. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're told about this situation in New York that this comes after 4 years of discussion among health officials. They worked with an 8-member panel of transgender experts. Well, there's your problem right there. You have bought into this worldview before you ever try to get to your policy. To get to this discussion, call 877-893-8255. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. My guest today is Dr. Russell Moore. We're before a live studio audience here in Louisville, Kentucky. We're talking about what's happening in New York City, where the city's health board is considering allowing persons to change the sex on their birth certificate without surgery, just by changing their name and living as the other sex for 2 years. The New York Times reporting says this: the change would lead to many intriguing questions. For example, would a man who becomes a woman be able to marry another man? Probably. Would an adoption agency be able to uncover the original sex of a proposed parent? Not without a court order. Would a woman who becomes a man be able to fight in combat or play in the National Football League? In parenthesis, these areas have yet to be explored. They're going to be explored.
Oh, sure. There are going to be lawsuits all over the place. And really, I don't think this is all that dramatic, because once you've already decided to allow people to have surgery and then call themselves the opposite sex, which is just as much a leap, this is just a natural outcome from that.
Well, by the way, speaking of the surgery, it says here at the final public hearing for the birth certificate proposal last week, a string of advocates and transsexuals argued that common definitions of gender, especially its reliance on medical assessments, should be abandoned. And yeah. I do think that's a step beyond where we've been. Now this is saying you don't even have to have a medical assessment, just living that way, because that means it's a lot less costly.
Well, and you're right, this is a revolt against God, because it's saying I'm not who God says I am. Yeah. I'm not who I'm created to be. I'm whom I create myself to be.
Phil's in Chincoteague, Virginia, calling and listening on XM170. Go ahead, Phil.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Thank you for taking my call. You just touched on it. It occurred to me that two men in a gay relationship, if one of them changes to a woman, then they can get married without any change in the law. That would be a legal marriage, I guess, right?
Yeah, you know, Phil, in some jurisdictions it already is. You're making a very good point, because that is one way to circumvent all of this, although that's not enough for gay marriage advocates. They want the ability to marry while maintaining their male or female sexual identity, just in a same-sex marriage. But you're right, this just opens up all kinds of gender confusion. Phil, you need to go pick up David Brinkley's last book, the late former anchor of NBC News. In the last chapter of his last book, David Brinkley talked about a man who discovered, after a couple of years of marriage, he was actually married to a man who had a sex change operation. And he had the funniest thing he said at the end of it to David Brinkley in the press report. At the end of it, he said, I should have had a hint of this when she always wanted power tools for Christmas. And you just look at that and you realize, yes, this leads to all kinds of confusion. And Phil's point about marriage, you know, again, relates to what do we do, not only in terms of the same-sex marriage debate and not only in terms of no-fault and divorce and all the rest, but what do we do when we confuse the issue of gender that doesn't ricochet throughout the society? I mean, this is everything. Let me give you another example here. You know, Phil was calling about marriage and what this could lead to in terms of confusion there. The New York Times talking about the National Football League. You know, what about, as you mentioned, bathrooms? You know, back when the Equal Rights Amendment was mm-hmm. before the states. You know, conservatives kept saying this could lead to confusion over gender in the bathrooms mm-hmm. and all the rest. And the proponent said, no, that would never happen. That'd be insane. Well, mm-hmm. guess what? 20 years later, we're already there.
That's right. And think about the children. Imagine a child in a public school classroom who has a man as a teacher who comes in and says, guess what? My name is Katie now. I mean, what happens to children who are listening to this kind of confusion? How do you raise kids in a society?
Well, as a matter of fact, that's going on right now. I did a program over the last summer in which some school districts said they wouldn't even allow parents to ask for their children to be reassigned when the children were traumatized. In this case, in a second grade classroom, when they went in and the teacher had been Mrs. Jones before the weekend, now she's Mr. Jones. Actually, I think it was the other way. I think it was Mr. Jones to Miss Jones. And, you know, the kids were very traumatized by this. And the school board said, look, it's his right. And, you know, in several municipalities, you even have laws. And, in fact, here in Louisville, Kentucky, there is a gay rights ordinance called the Fairness Amendment on the books in Louisville, Kentucky, that says you can't discriminate based upon a person's perceived sexual orientation. Now, you think about that legally. That, I mean, that means a person says that you didn't think I was a legitimate transsexual. Mm. I mean, this is all kinds of insanity you get down to. But speaking of insanity, finally, I want to turn to Stephanie Kuntz, and we're kind of accustomed to insanity from her.
Yes.
She's a sociologist that tends to deal a great deal with marriage and other issues. In the New York Times also, the same day that the sex change article came out, she's arguing, quote, Americans have put all their emotional eggs in the basket of coupled love. Because of this change, many of us have found joys in marriage our great-grandparents never had, but we've also neglected our other relationships, placing too many burdens on a fragile institution and making social life poorer in the progress. What she's saying here is that that we trust too much in marriage. People ought to be free to have deeply intimate relationships outside of marriage. And you know, we used to have a word for that, and it was adultery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, this is part of a long trend. You think about even in television sitcoms like Friends and so forth that really see your primary relationship as being outside of any kind of family. It's these chosen relationships outside of that. She's simply following in that train.
Let me read from her article here. She said the solution is not to revive the failed marital experiment of the 1950s, as so many commentators noting the decline in married couple households seem to want, nor is it to lower our expectations that we'll find fulfillment in friendship and marriage. Instead, we should raise our expectations for and commitment to other relationships, especially since so many people now live so much of their lives outside of marriage. Now, by the way, Stephanie Kuntz is a history professor. She writes social history at Evergreen State College. Now, that is the college that is notorious for being so liberal it doesn't give grades.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because that
they don't play dodgeball either there.
No, I bet you're safe there. No tag. No tag. They don't have grades because they say that leads to an achievement-based society.
Isn't that sad? I mean, what kind of loneliness do you see? There's somebody who can't understand the joy of Ephesians 5 that God has patterned into the creation. I mean, that's just incredible sadness that you see in her writing.
And well, and let's just counter this with a very strong word. Here is the clear admonition concerning Christian marriage. A man should not have deeply intimate relationships with any woman other than his wife.
Right. That's right.
And same thing the other way.
Yeah. And you think about what Solomon says, find joy in the wife of your youth. This ought to be something that is happy and joyous. And somebody who's running away from that is just sad.
Yeah, you see the tentativeness that anyone with this kind of worldview has to have when they approach marriage. It's no wonder so many marriages aren't happy. It's because if this is your view of marriage, and no wonder they don't last, you don't have to give yourself to it. You don't have to make it work. You know, it goes back to the fact I was reading a social historian the other day who said, you know, speaking very negatively about marriage, they look back and they said, you know, we should be glad we don't live in a time in which the answer to marriage problems was work it out. I have to say the opposite, Russ.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we need is a marriage culture in which we say to people, work it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and divorce is an option. It's going to happen.
Yeah, well, and in this case, you don't even need a divorce because you can stay married and just find your friendships elsewhere. It's a very cold, sterile, and negative understanding of marriage. And yet I think what we're reaping here is the fruit of the sexual revolution. I think you have these academics who were part of the sexual revolution in the 60s. And frankly, they've never known the joy of an authentic marriage. And now they see marriage as the problem rather than the solution. Insanity seems to reign in so many sectors of our culture. This is why Christians have to be attentive, alert, and keen thinking about these issues, and it's also why we need to talk about them together. That's why we took up these issues today, and I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. My guest today is Russell Moore. We're talking about insanity reigning in so many circles, dodgeball tag being outlawed, sex change being now routinized in the city of New York, and marriage being said to be unfulfilling, such that couples should find their deepest relationships elsewhere. You wonder what's going on in the world. Russ Moore is my guest today. Russ, just a few days ago, Mary called me, my wife, on the road. And Christopher, our 14-year-old son, wanted to buy a pellet gun, a pellet pistol. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he ended up buying it. It's a cool gun. Mm-hmm. I kind of wish we'd gotten two. And, you know, there are a lot of people who look at that and say, you know, that's teaching violence or whatever. Well, I'd much rather him be shooting at a paper target than worry about, you know, what would happen later. Now, you've got three little boys. You got two little boys who are old enough to play tag. Are you allowing them to play tag?
Oh, they're playing tag all the time, and we're trying to keep them from throwing each other down the stairs, and when they do, we deal with that. And you can't be hyper-protective in raising kids, especially boys. I mean, if you have someone standing right, you could put an eye out with that gun. Well, that's why you've got a dad there. Teach him how to shoot the gun without putting
you it out. You could put an eye out with that
gun. Sure, sure.
All right. Now, what about dodgeball? You going to let them do that?
Sure, let them do that.
I mean, they could get hurt.
They could get hurt.
They could take out aggression.
And they need to learn how to get hurt.
They could show a mean face.
Sure, they could. They need to learn how to be knocked down and how to get back up and to run on. That's what dads are for. When they fall off the bicycle, to say, you can get back up and go. That's how they learn to deal with challenges in life and how they learn to do spiritual warfare later on.
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting issues about tag is that it is not gender specific. Girls seem to love playing tag as much as boys. It's a childhood game. And there's just something that's pretty natural about it. And that's the thing that gets me. And the article I wrote on this outlawing of tag, I just set forth the school board's policy, and then I answered that with this. Yeah, like that'll ever happen.
Right.
You know, you can tell kids not to play tag. You can tell kids not to breathe, but eventually they're going to breathe.
Right.
And, you know, it's certainly legitimate to say you can't play tag now, or you can't play tag there, or you can't play tag mean.
Mm-hmm.
But just saying you can't play tag, I mean, what in the world is that saying to kids? I mean, what are we saying about childhood?
You're saying that life is safe and that ever you could be hurt, so just don't do anything. And that's why you wind up with the kind of passive men that we have out there all over the planet.
Well, that's how you end up with the kind of society that also gets to the point of adulthood and says, you want to figure out the gender equation? Well, just see what you are for the next 2 years and then change your birth certificate. We are living in very strange times. There's only one explanation for this, and that is and something that Christians should know. And that is that as a society grows deeper and deeper into a rebellion against the order of things that God has given us, even in nature, the more confused and the more self-deceptive this society becomes.
And you know what Solomon says in the Proverbs, what wisdom says, all who hate me love death. We've got to show another way of life.
This is a place for intelligent Christian conversation. Day by day, we take up the issues that confront us, and today we've looked at some of the strangest to appear in recent days. You can be assured of this. The issues aren't going to go away, and we'll be back next week with an intelligent Christian conversation. Thanks for joining us today. Join us next week for the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.